Well, I had one of the best sleeps that I've had in a very long time last night. It was 5 hours, and was it more like 5.5 hours, I think? Yeah, it was close to 5.5 hours at one stretch, and then more than 4 hours after that at one stretch. So two stretches totaling more than 9 hours of sleep. It was because I didn't hydrate too much. That was why I was able to do that. It was just amazing. I mean, it's just so much better to get that kind of quality sleep. But today, it's February 14th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 21:01 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. We're going to go through 1 Chronicles 4 rather quickly, and then we'll look at Daniel 5 in more detail, I hope. And we've got a proverb for today also. It's from Ecclesiastes. Today, it will be... Which one is it? Let's see. Or is it Proverbs? I didn't pick one yet. I meant to pick one. That's right. I think it's from Ecclesiastes. Let's just check. Today... Is it? Yes. Right. Okay. So let's pick one from Ecclesiastes. We'll do that after we read our crucible inset paragraph for today, which is, let me see what we did yesterday. The inset paragraph yesterday, I'm looking it up, paragraph 12, paragraph 5 of the section called the Exodus, or paragraph 12 in the grander version, or in the overall paragraph number, from the Arabian tradition inset in chapter 6 of the Crucible article. The successor to De Luca on the Arab list. De Luca was the old woman who fits Hatshepsut perfectly, so we already know that it's got to be Thutmose I, because, for one thing, Thutmose II didn't rule for more than about 3 years. He wasn't a very significant king. The pharaoh, he could have been the pharaoh of the Exodus, but it wouldn't change our chronology by more than 3 years anyway. But Thutmose I is very much more sensible for the pharaoh of the Exodus, because both his daughter and his grandson donated a coffin in his honor after his passing. And that was because, I mean, long after his passing, when the coffin was not even, wouldn't have been needed, which shows that his body was never found. That's the evidence that we have for that, which makes him, that is Thutmose I, therefore, the Exodus pharaoh, which is a great, great discovery. And the successor to De Luca on the Arab list is Darkan, a king called Darkun or Darkan, a king who came to the, in quotes, came to the crown very young. An emphatic agreement, right? Because we know that Thutmose III was too young to rule without the help of his aunt Hatshepsut, who was De Luca, evidently, from all that we've learned recently in the Arabian tradition. And Hatshepsut co-ruled. It says it's an emphatic agreement, since Hatshepsut co-ruled with her stepson Thutmose III for the first 22 years of his reign. That's how young he came to the throne. Very young. So he wasn't able to even get the throne into his own hands for some time, until he could finally wrest it away from Hatshepsut, his aunt. Because he was too young, was the end of that sentence. And then we have, continuing reading this paragraph, while Thutmose III officially ruled for 54 years, right, which fits, you know, which fits this description of this king called Darkun, who succeeded De Luca. He ruled in all for 54 years, did Thutmose III, which fits perfectly. Again, this is emphatically in agreement with the successor to De Luca being, in fact, the successor to Hatshepsut, Thutmose III. So Thutmose III ruled, or officially ruled, for 54 years, 22 years of those being considered as in co-rulership with Hatshepsut. Tardis, the next king on the Arab list, is said to reign a, quote, long time, unquote, which also fits. He's the one after Darkun, or Darkun, Tardis. But that reigning for a long time fits really well with Thutmose III also. So we see there's some kind of, are we calling it conflation? I'm not sure if it's conflation or the opposite of conflation. But we've got two different pharaohs who were described as coming after the one called Deluca in the Arabian tradition, and both of these ones that succeed Deluca fit Thutmose III, since a long time agrees with 54 years, surely, which was the length of reign of Thutmose III, and that's a very long time for an Egyptian pharaoh, or also for any king, and that's the end of our study for today in that article. The Crucible of Credible Creed, that article is called, published in 2012 by yours truly. And I'm very, very much enjoying reading it with you little children. I hope you're observing your regular bedtime. I'm just late tonight. Because I slept so well, I guess, partly. Now let's look at 1 Chronicles 4. We're going to look at that first, and then we'll go to Daniel 5, hopefully. And then, well, no, first of all, we need to do, that's right, we always start with our proverb, don't we? Ecclesiastes. I'm drawn to chapter 6 and verse 6, I don't know why. 2 and 1, that works. Even supposing that he has lived 1,000 years twice over and yet he has not seen what is good, is it not to just one place that everyone's going? Ecclesiastes 6 and 6. Referring to, referring to someone who has not been satisfied during his own life. There is some smoke in the air here because I'm burning a wood fire in the basement, in the wood stove, and I'm running the fan out in the hall, but not too bad, but I can feel it in my nose. I have enough sensitivity to detect that. So, little children, let's read 1 Chronicles chapter 4. We're just going to read through it, hopefully. The sons of Judah were Perez, Hezron, and Carmi, and Hur, and Shobal. As for Reaah, son of Shobal, he became father to Jahath. Jahath in turn became father to Ahumai and Lahad. These were the families of the Zorathites. And these were the sons of the father of Etam, Jezreel and Ishma and Idbash. And the name of their sister was Hazalel Poni. That's it, Hazalel Poni. And Penuel, the father of Gedor, and Ezer, the father of Husha. These were the sons of the father of Edom. These were the sons of Hur, the firstborn of Ephrathah, the father of Bethlehem, and Asher. Okay, right. That's interesting. These are the sons of Hur. Firstborn of Ephrathah, the father of Bethlehem. And Asher, verse 5, the father of Tekoa, came to have two wives, Hela and Naarah. In time Naarah bore to him Ahuzam, and Hefer, and Temani, and Ahashtari. These were the sons of Naarah. Ahashtari, that's an interesting name. And the sons of Hela were Zereth, Izhar, and Ethnan. As for Koz, he became father to Anab and Zobiba, and the families of Aharhel, the son of Haram. They're all interesting names, of course. And Jabal came to be more honorable than his brothers, and it was his mother that called his name Jabez, saying, I have given him birth in pain. And Jabez began to call upon the God of Israel, saying, if you will without fail bless me and actually enlarge my territory, and your hand really proves to be with me, and you really preserve me from calamity, that it may not hurt me. Got too much brightness here. What's going on? Accordingly, God brought to pass what he had asked. As for Chelub, the brother of Shuha, he became father to Mehir, who was the father of Eshton. Eshton, in turn, became father to Beth-Repha, and Pasea, and Tehina, the father of Ir-Nahash. These were the men of Rekah, and the sons of Kenaz were Othniel and Saraiah, and the sons of Othniel, Hathath. As for Meonathai, he became father to Ophrah. As for Saraiah, he became father to Joab, the father of Gahar Ashem. For craftsmen are what they became. And the sons of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He's the Caleb who spied out the land. His sons were Iru, Elah and Naam, and the sons of Elah, Kenaz. And the sons of Jehalalel were Ziph and Zipha, Tiria and Azarel. And the sons of Ezra were Jether and Mered and Epher and Jalon. And she got to conceive Miriam and Shammai and Ishba, the father of Eshtemoah. As for his Jewish wife, she gave birth to Jered, the father of Gedor, and Heber, the father of Soko, and Jekuthiel, the father of Zanoah. And these were the sons of Bithiah, the daughter of Pharaoh, whom Mered took. It's interesting. So it sounds like the end of the paragraph could be referring to the next paragraph, possibly, in those two cases where we saw a reference to, or the end of verse 4, it said, these were the sons of Hur, the firstborn of Ephrathah, the father of Bethlehem. We didn't see Hur mentioned. Well, there it is. Well, he was mentioned, but we didn't see his sons mentioned. We saw the sons of Shobal mentioned, and perhaps Hur is the father of Etam, but we didn't see that mentioned. Okay, carrying on. Verse 19 now. And the sons of Hodiah's wife, the sister of Naham, were the father of Kalah, the Garmite, and Eshtemoah, the Maacathite. And the sons of Shimon were Amnon and Rinnah, Benhanan and Tilon. And the sons of Ishi were Zoheth and Ben-Zoheth. The sons of Shelah, the son of Judah, were Er, the father of Lekah, and Leada, the father of Marisha, and the families of the house of the workers of fine fabric of the house of Ashbia. And Jochim and the men of Kozeba, and Joash and Seraph, who became owners of Moabite wives, and Jashubilehem, and the sayings are of old tradition. They were the potters and the inhabitants of Netaim and Gedera. It was with the king in his work that they dwelt there. The sons of Simeon were Nemuel and Jamin, Jarib, Zerah, Sheul, Shalom his son, Mibsam his son, Mishma his son. And the sons of Mishma were the sons of Mishma were Hamuel his son, Zachar his son, Shimei his son. I keep wanting to say Shimei, but it's not really Shimei. I think it's Shimei or Shimei, his son. And Shimei had 16 sons and 6 daughters. But his brothers did not have many sons, and none of their families had as many as the sons of Judah, and they continued to dwell in Beersheba, and Moleda, and Hazar Shual, and in Bilha, and in Ezem, and in Tolad, and in Bethuel, and in Hormah, and in Ziklag, and in Beth-Markaboth, and in Hazar-Susim, and in Beth-Biri, and in Shearim. These were their cities down till David reigned, and that their settlements were Etam and Ain, Rimmon and Token, and Ashan, five cities, and all their settlements that were all around these cities were as far as Baal. These were their dwelling places and their genealogical enrollments for them, and Meshobab, and Jamlech, and Josha, the son of Amaziah, and Joel, and Jehu, the son of Joshabiah, the son of Sareah, the son of Asiel, and Elioene, and Jacoba, and Jishohea, and Asaiah, and Adiel, and Jesimiel, and Benaiah, and Ziza, the son of Shiphi, the son of Alon, the son of Judea, the son of Shimri, the son of Shemaiah, these who came in by names were the chieftains among their families, and the household itself of their forefathers increased in multitude. And they proceeded to go to the entryway of Gedor, clear to the east of the valley, to look for pasturage for their flocks. Eventually they found fat and good pasturage, and the land was quite wide, and having no disturbance, but at ease, for those dwelling there in former times were of Ham, and these written down by their names proceeded to come in the days of Hezekiah, the king of Judah, and strike down the tents of the Hamites and the Meunim that were to be found there, so that they devoted them to destruction down to this day, and they began to dwell in their place, because there was pasturage for their flocks there. And from them there were some of the sons of Simeon, that went to Mount Seir, 500 men with Pelatiah, Neariah, and Rephaiah, and Uziel, the sons of Ishi, at their head. And they proceeded to strike down the remnant that had escaped of Amalek, and they continued to dwell there down to this day. They struck down the remnant of those escaped of Amalek. That's the end of 1 Chronicles chapter 4. We're just going to move on. Daniel chapter 5. As regards Belshazzar the king, he made a big feast for 1,000 of his grandees, and in front of 1,000 he was drinking wine. Belshazzar, under the influence of the wine, said to bring in the vessels of gold and of silver that Nebuchadnezzar his father had taken away from the temple that was in Jerusalem, that from them the king and his grandees, his concubines, and his secondary wives might drink. At that time they brought in the vessels of gold that they had taken away from the temple of the house of God that was in Jerusalem, and from them the king and his grandees, his concubines, and his secondary wives, from them these vessels that had come from Jerusalem, the king and his grandees, his concubines, and his secondary wives drank. They drank wine, and they praised the gods of gold and of silver, copper, iron, wood, and stone. So they weren't being good examples for others in worshiping false gods, so neither were they being a good example in drinking wine either. As we saw earlier, Daniel himself was able to avoid drinking wine while he was in Babylon. At that moment the fingers of a man's hand came forth and were writing in front of the lampstand upon the plaster of the wall of the palace of the king. And the king was beholding the back of the hand that was writing. At that time, as regards the king, his very complexion was changed in him, and his own thoughts began to frighten him, and his hip joints were loosening, and his very knee joints were knocking together. His very knees were knocking together. They were knocking each other. The king was calling out loudly to bring in the conjurers, the Chaldeans, and the astrologers. The king was answering and saying to the wise men of Babylon, "Any man that will read this writing and show me its very interpretation, with purple he will be clothed, and with a necklace of gold about his neck, and as the third one in the kingdom he will rule." at that time, all the wise men of the king, I was going to say, we could say all the wise men of Babylon, but at that time, all the wise men of the king were coming in, but they were not competent enough to read the writing itself or to make known to the king the interpretation. Consequently, King Belshazzar was very much frightened, and his complexion was changed within him, and his grandees were perplexed. As regards the queen, because of the words of the king and his grandees, we know that, by the way, Belshazzar was the crown prince of Babylon according to some documents, which we can refer to here. There's a wonderful footnote here. I mean, it's not a footnote, actually. It's the reference. When we click on the verse, then we can go to the reference, which is the fourth one from the left. And in the Insight books, it says, it is true that official inscriptions give Belshazzar the title of crown prince, while in the book of Daniel, his title is king. An archaeological discovery in northern Syria suggests why this may be the case. In 1979, a life-sized statue of a ruler of ancient Gozan was unearthed. On its skirt were two inscriptions, one in Assyrian and the other in Aramaic. Two inscriptions, one in Assyrian and the other in Aramaic, which is the language of the Belshazzar account in Daniel, Aramaic, that is. The two almost identical inscriptions had one outstanding difference. The text in the Imperial Assyrian language says that the statue was the governor of Gozan. The text in Aramaic, the language of the local people, describes him as king. So this was a ruler of ancient Gozan. It was not the same king we're talking about here. But that's fascinating. And by the way, it was Alan Gardner who described the Egyptian chronology as a collection of rags and tatters, or the Egyptian history, which he said was called history by other people, was nothing more than a collection of rags and tatters, in his words. That was Alan Gardner, an Egyptologist, a fairly well-known Egyptologist. But also, Darius the king, Darius the Mede, who is mentioned at the end of this chapter of Daniel, he is explained as having been a governor that was appointed by Cyrus, but because Cyrus had conquered the Medes, it was the kingdom of the Medes and Persians, not just the Persian king Cyrus. So therefore, Darius the Mede is the title that was given to the ruler that was appointed by Cyrus over Babylon, and he may have been this person who was mentioned by the name of Gubaru. Let's see. Oh yeah, right. There's a lot of information given here. But Belshazzar was actually the crown prince because Nabonidus was the real king. And it was from the 15th to 13th year of Nabonidus' reign that there are six cuneiform texts concerning events that demonstrate Belshazzar's devotion to Babylonian deities. So, yeah, we'd have to click on Darius the Mede at the end of the chapter. We click on that, and we go to that historical reference, fourth from the left of the selection options. And we see that all the other possibilities having been eliminated for who Darius the Mede may have been, we see that we finally arrive further down here to Gubaru, who lived 14 years as governor, not only of the city of Babylon, but of the entire region of Babylonia, as well as of the region beyond the river, which included Syria, Phoenicia, and Palestine, down to the Egyptian frontier. So Cyrus was the Persian king. He wasn't interested in ruling directly in Babylon. He was the official king, but the other ruler, Darius the Mede, mentioned at the end of this chapter, was a governor appointed by Cyrus, so it makes very good sense, too. And his name, it appears, may have been Gubaru, not the same as Ugbaru, who only lived for some period of months after the conquest, or weeks, I think. A short period of time, a few weeks. Within a few weeks of the conquest, he had died, according to this entry. This is all of this entry that we're reading is from the Insight book under Darius. And the other one, which we read from the beginning of the chapter, it was from the Insight book under Belshazzar. And then we could go down, and there's an entry under Cyrus also mentioned, and there's a book called Daniel's Prophecy as well mentioned, which mentions the chapter Daniel, a book on trial, I guess is the name of the chapter. Paragraph 7, it talks about Daniel, and critics have long argued against this idea of Belshazzar being the king, because there was no record of Belshazzar for a long time, but then they eventually found one. Instead, they thought that Nabonidus must be the king and not Belshazzar, so the critics of the Bible had an argument to make against Belshazzar. But in 1854... they unearthed in the Babylonian city of Ur, in what is now southern Iraq, some cuneiform documents from King Nabonidus, which included a prayer for Belsarusur, my eldest son. Belshazzar, evidently. Even the critics agreed this was the Belshazzar of the Book of Daniel. So, the king was calling loudly to bring the conjurers, the Chaldeans and the astrologers. The king was answering and saying to the wise men of Babylon, "Any man that will read this writing and show me its very interpretation, with purple he will be clothed, with a necklace of gold around his neck, and as the third one in the kingdom he will rule." At that time all the wise men of the king were coming in, but they were not competent enough to read the writing itself or to make known to the king the interpretation. Consequently, King Belshazzar was very much frightened, and his complexion was changing within him, and his grandees were perplexed. As regards the queen, because of the words of the king and his grandees, she entered right into the banqueting hall. She must have heard them, sounds like. The queen answered and said, "O king, keep living, even to times indefinite. Do not let your thoughts frighten you, nor let your complexion be changed. There exists a capable man in your kingdom." I'm not able to speak today for some reason. "A capable man in your kingdom." I guess I'm not warmed up or something. My mouth isn't warmed up. "In whom there is the spirit of holy gods." A capable man in your kingdom there exists. "In whom there is the spirit of holy gods. And in the days of your father, illumination and insight and wisdom like the wisdom of gods were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father, himself set him up as chief of the magic practicing priests, the conjurers, the Chaldeans, and the astrologers, even your father, O king." Now we know this occurred in the year 539 BCE, these events. This was the last year of Nabonidus. "For as much as an extraordinary spirit and knowledge and insight to interpret dreams and the explanation of riddles and the untying of knots had been found in him, in Daniel, whom the king himself named Belteshazzar," similar to Belshazzar, but not quite the same. "Now let Daniel himself be called, that he may show thee Now, let Daniel himself be called that he may show the very interpretation. I'm just imagining that the words are... I'm trying to paraphrase instead of read. That's why I'm reading so strangely. But call Daniel so he can tell you the interpretation is what she said. So, these things that happened, he wasn't... Nebuchadnezzar was not the immediate father. He was like a great-great-great-grandfather or something, or... What, I mean, obviously not the father, because there have been several kings who'd come after Nebuchadnezzar before this. This is now 65 years after Nebuchadnezzar's year one. 65 years or something after. Nebuchadnezzar ruled for 43 years, we should say, according to all the evidence that we have. Accordingly, and that's believed to be very reliable information, because the history of Babylon is well documented in all the cuneiform documents, which of which there are thousands and thousands and thousands. Accordingly, Daniel himself was brought in before the king. The king was speaking up and saying to Daniel, "Are you the Daniel that is of the exiles of Judah, whom the king, my father, brought out of Judah?" Now, there's no way that Nebuchadnezzar could be the father of this person, Belshazzar, I don't think. Although he could be chronologically, could be his father, I suppose. Could be his literal father, but he doesn't have to be at all. It was typical among the Hebrews, certainly, that the father could be somebody who was the forefather. It just means the forefather. I've also heard concerning you that the Spirit of God is in you, and illumination and insight and wisdom extraordinary have been found in you. And now there have been brought in before me the wise men and the conjurers, that they may read this very writing, even to make known to me its interpretation, but they are not competent enough to show me the very interpretation of the word. And I myself have heard concerning you that you are able to furnish interpretations and to untie knots themselves. So we're out of time already. We ran out of time. At that, Daniel was answering and saying, keep your gifts, because he promised him a lot of gifts there in verse 16. But Daniel went on to say, here's the interpretation, the days of your kingdom are finished, basically is what he said. And then on that very night, Belshazzar, the Chaldean king, was killed. And Darius the Mede himself received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. And that was the end of chapter Daniel 5. It was, the inscription read, Mene, Mene, Tikal, and Parson. That was the inscription. And it meant, Tikal, you have been weighed in the balances and found deficient. Perez, your kingdom. Or Tikal, you, yeah. Mene meant, God has numbered your days. Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. And that's all for today, little ones. It's February 14th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 21:33 hours Eastern Standard Time, now 21:34 hours. I love you. I'm Ward Green. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty. This is Cassie saying, where are you, Cassie? Saying, there you are. Bye for now.